Hey there, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. My name's Robert Winters, and we have an exciting show tonight.
Yes.
Right? In addition to Judy, we also have our special guest, Mr. Patrick Barrett.
Yes.
Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Patrick.
Hello, hello, and thank you for having me on this show.
Joining us in our Zoom room. Yeah.
Joining in the Zoom room.
Yeah. This is our version of the Brady Bunch. Right. So Patrick, for those who don't know who you are, which is anybody, who are you, Patrick?
So I'm resident of Cambridge. I live in Central Square in the Riverside part.
Yeah.
I'm a property owner in Central Square. I'm an attorney, specialized in zoning. I'm also a developer. I built a hotel at 907 Main Street. And I own a few restaurants, the Dial, the Blue Owl, as well as Toscanini's Ice Cream with Gus and Mimi. And I am also the co-chair of the Central Square Business Improvement District, which we started now 3 years ago, about a week ago.
It's 3 years. Wow. Actually, I thought we were actually hit almost four, but I guess I'm losing
track. Time flies when you're having COVID.
Yes, that's really true. That's really
funny.
True.
I haven't heard that expression. That's
and I will remind those who
I'm trying never to get it started.
Those who never saw the little 10-second video of Patrick putting together some of the benches for the outdoor patios with a drill.
Oh.
And he said, "What are you doing there, fella?" And he says, "I'm saving capitalism one screw at a time."
Oh, that's
it was a great moment, actually. So anyway, so for today, though, we wanted to talk about at least one very specific topic, which is something that's entitled the Building Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance. BEUDO is the the acronym.
Right.
And which was an initiative that was originally adopted by the Cambridge City Council in 2014, which wasn't so long ago, and was originally meant to be all about just disclosure of energy use. And pretty much that was it. And it affected buildings. I think from the CDD write-up was about 1,100 buildings at the time, which at least it was said was responsible for approximately 75% of building sector greenhouse gas emissions. I don't know if that's accurate.
That's a very specific way of stating it. And I'm glad you said it so clearly, because it says building sector emissions. So 70% of building sector emissions. That is not all emissions in Cambridge, as it has been described. So I think it's important to make that distinction. I'm glad you did, Robert. Thank you.
Right. So an ordinance was passed, and it was really all about disclosure. But commencing, a couple years ago, maybe more, there were some proposed amendments, which I think even the amendments have been amended subsequently.
Yes. But Robert, wait a minute. What square footage was in the original?
I forgot to say. It's actually 25,000 square foot.
In 2014?
Right. And also residential properties over 50 units. That was what it was supposed to cover.
Oh.
So sorry for not mentioning that.
But
now I don't know whether those thresholds are being proposed to be changed just now. Perhaps they are. But Patrick, I think the reason why we have you here is that maybe you can say a thing or two about this.
I'm getting fired up. So,
all right, Patrick.
The amendments had been in the works for about 4 years, bouncing around the walls of CDD and amongst the council. The amendments that are currently being brought forth are being brought forth by councillors Nolan, Siddiqui, and Zondervan, who is currently the scribe for the group. The amendments have been ongoing, and as early as today at noon, it was amended again. So we have a hearing coming up tomorrow that
5:30.
We have amendments that I think most people will not be aware of, but let's get into the meat and potatoes of what it's actually going to do. So the threshold, let's start off with what's considered to be a covered property under BEUDO, and that's the proper language. A covered property now will be adjusted to properties that are singularly or in aggregate up to 25,000 square feet or greater. So it is possible now under these amendments that properties that are smaller than 25,000 square feet could be lumped into this if they are part of a larger campus or part of a larger holding for a singular or multiple owner group. These amendments, once passed, will begin the process of charging a tax, which is currently being called an alternative compliance credit, which, if you've ever read 1984, you understand the sort of euphemistic language being used. That being said, the alternative compliance tax credit is then for charged for buildings on a per ton basis for emissions being, released onto the universe until they reach net zero. Now there's a schedule that goes along with this, and it sort of meets out, every year you're supposed to become a little bit more efficient and your tax credit that you're given becomes a little bit less. So you actually wind up paying more every year that you're not net zero. Language was introduced a couple hours ago that tries to skirt this issue a little bit by deferring some of those credits for people who decide to make their buildings net zero right away. Because the thought was, I'm assuming, that if I'm paying tens, hundreds, maybe $1 million or more to bring my building to a net zero energy use or emissions, then I should not also be paying this tax on top of that. I agree with that. However, the bigger issue and the biggest sort of elephant in the room is these discussions have been going on for ages. And the very first meeting that I was allowed to attend was a week ago.
What do you mean allowed to attend?
So no one really knows about any of these meetings. And I
thought MIT and Harvard are part of this.
They sure are.
I think that's kind of the point right there.
All right, go ahead.
So think of it as two trains. There's the train that Harvard and MIT are on. And right now, Harvard and MIT made the bold claim that they were going to make their campuses net zero by 2026.
Wow.
What a great goal. Aren't they fantastic? But that was done through a global tax credit system. So they were going to buy credits from some place and apply them to their carbon usage. And that was how they were going to achieve it.
I see.
So this ordinance upends all of that and doesn't even allow them to use. And part of one of Quentin Zondervan's talking points for his rally tomorrow at 5 o'clock.
Rally.
It's an online rally, which just seems like the lamest possible thing a person can do, but that's Quentin's brand. But one of the talking points is like not allowing Harvard or MIT to participate in a global tax credit system, carbon offset system, but to then use a local carbon credit system, which for those of you watching at home and for you guys here, that doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a local carbon tax credit emission credit. Doesn't exist.
Actually, I have a clarifying question about this. And this actually, at least for me, it also goes back to when people were first promoting, I forget what the name of the initiative was, about going for net zero energies for Cambridge, which was this issue about at what point does a municipality even have the authority to require certain things that involve payments without it becoming a de facto tax.
Interesting.
For which municipalities, at least in Massachusetts, do not have the authority to simply impose a tax.
So that's a big part of why I'm here as well. But I think let's get to that a little bit later, because there's really three legal issues that pop up, that being the first one. But let's get to the two trains and where we're going and who's really on which train. The first train is Harvard MIT talking about this credit system where they've already kind of made commitments and they want to, do what they can do with their $1 billion endowments to offset this issue for themselves. That's been the entire discussion today. Nothing else has been brought to the fore. There's no smaller property owners like myself and others who own buildings that are 25,000 square feet or greater, or condo associations of units, or affordable housing trusts. Right. No one else is at the table right now. I sat at a meeting where I actually had a run from my child's presentation on the war in Ukraine,
which
was riveting. He is a third grader at Cambridge Public School. And,
and because, stay with your topic. Okay.
Because I go lots of places. But the what set me off was listening to him talk about disclosures and all these issues, and they weren't really getting to the meat of potatoes and how practically this works. So I ran down the office, and there was, you know, Harvard, MIT, big table, you know, lots of smiles, and no other representation. And some of the issues that I had raised prior to this meeting, backup emergency systems for buildings. You know, right now, currently you are using gas or diesel. No one really likes to put diesel tanks in the ground. So we all use gas because that's the best way to do it. And that's really a federally regulated issue regarding ADA compliance. That's a bit nuanced. I'm not going to get too into the details on the construction element of that. But in order to eliminate the usage for emergency backup systems, you'd have to basically cut a building like a cake knife and create fire separations and fire doors on every levels to provide an egress path that may or may not be achievable depending on the age of the building and makeup. Sure. It's a little bit more nuanced. But let's say, for the sake of argument, I don't want to be on train one and I don't care about tax credits because I'm not part of that environment and I don't know what it is and I don't even know where to even start. But that I'm on train number two, and I'm a property owner who owns a building that's 25,000 square feet or greater, or a condo association, or et cetera. And I am now looking at trying to energize my building through electricity only. The biggest thing that comes to mind, number one, 52% of all the energy used by Eversource currently comes from fossil fuels. So trying to buy green energy will become a little bit more complicated if this passes and tomorrow we're all required to buy simply green energy. Two, to electrify my building. Now, I just built a building, brand new-ish. I took a 200-year-old building and I renovated it like a crazy person and built a hotel.
The hotel.
Yes.
And a fine building it is, Mr. Barrett.
And Condé Nast twice.
Oh, so wow. Okay.
I'm pretty fancy, Judy. I'm pretty fancy. So let's just take that building as an example because it's brand new, right? Now, Eversource could give me 800 amps of electricity from their 500 kVA transformer in the street. That's what they could promise me. In order to supply my building with enough juice, I had to go up to at least 1200 amps. So the question was then, do I want to get rid of the ground floor retail, which on Columbia Street, there's a French patisserie named Praline. It's owned by two lovely people who live in Belmont. Or the patio, which is the outdoor dining source that, quite frankly, was the only way that the restaurant survived 2020.
During COVID, right.
And rip out that, and basically that entire section and turn that into one transformer and switchgear. Now, the transformer will supply the energy. The switchgear is really designed to protect from surges or to help essentially regulate surges between neighbors. So it's really part of Eversource's infrastructure, but they oftentimes require developers to include them as part of their package as a sort of give me to Eversource for them supplying me with more juice. I protested for about a year and a half, as only I know how to do, and I got them to jump me up to 1200 amps, but that still wasn't enough to electrify everything.
Wow.
So I had to put in a emergency backup generator, as I discussed, that's gas powered. We do have some kitchen equipment, two stoves to name them, that are gas, which were really more of my chef really wanted it kind of thing. So we went with that. And then my ERV systems on the roof, which supply fresh air into the building, which I felt was very important even pre-COVID. I kind of focus on HVAC a lot in the things that I do, because I think it's the unseen gift of a building to be able to supply fresh air and to recirculate the air. And that's what our building does. But we had to create a backup system that uses gas just in case of a burnout or a brownout, which the building has experienced twice in my ownership. Mm-hmm. So we are 90%, maybe 98% electrified, mm-hmm. but for these two elements that if I were to make them completely electric, I would then be subject to adding a transformer and switchgear. This is the thing that most people in my bracket are going to face. And if you're in your condo association, it's the same thing. Eversource is not going to supply you enough energy to your building from the street that's going to eliminate the need for, at the very basic, a transformer. Some of these can be smaller in size, and in some places they may have land. But if you look at like places like Central Square, where most buildings have a zero lot line, right, it becomes an impossibility. And part of that impossibility is about the clearances, the head heights, the circumference that Eversource requires by regulation to install these. I have to have 15-foot head height clearance. I have to have 24-hour access to Eversource. I have to have a 20 by 20 room with 6-foot clear on either side of the device. That's what they require. So try to think about trying to jam an SUV into some of these buildings. And it's just not practical. And it's not because these people don't want to do it. And then you take other buildings in Central Square currently that are gas heated. They have tenants. They have residential tenants, they have commercial tenants. We are a mixed use district. In order to go in and to fully electrify that building, I'm going to evict everybody because I have to. I have to get everyone out of that building in order to put in the mini splits and the heat pumps, if that even is viable in our coldest of winters, to supply them with heat and cooling. So in a lot of ways, what I would call the most important part of this conversation is not even on the radar of the city council, of this discussion, because all they've been talking about for the past 4 years and up until last year has been these tax credits. Now, Robert, I want to talk about the legality of this. You're absolutely right. An alternative compliance credit, however you want to dress it up, is a tax. It's a tax on property owners done through the municipality to achieve something that they're never going to be able to achieve. And the worst part about it is currently, as it is written, at 2035, when we're all supposed to be net zero, and this alternative tax, when I'm not even allowed to pay anymore, when I no longer have the gift of being able to pay more taxes to the city, my building gets shut off. So you can imagine why property owners are a little bit in a panic. And a lot of these guys, and I have to say, like this phony baloney narrative that we're like these terrible human beings that prey on human misery and wish to burn the planet, it's just nonsense. And it's propagated by a counselor named Quentin Zondervan, who simply needs a black and white argument to win. He's pushing a group called Mothers Out Front and Green Cambridge to come and say, God knows what. I've seen their talking points and they're incredibly basic. They don't have any of the nuance. And I feel like they're being misled. I think they're being lied to be ballast on the boat of Quentin Zondervan's ego. And in my opinion, this is why I've asked to come here, Robert. I am thoroughly frustrated because no one in my line of work or who owns buildings dreams of running gas through a building. No one dreams of having a big oil tank to heat their winters, or, you know, it's not something anyone wants to do.
But what about coal?
Well, the funny part about coal, in Central Square, they made us fill in all the vaults and pay for it underground, and we got rid of the coal vault. So even if we wanted to use coal, it's off the table. But,
right.
You know, the point is, like, we want, my building is orders of magnitude more efficient. My electrical bill and my gas bill are lower today with my hotel uses and my restaurant uses than it was when it was just apartments and small retail.
Okay, Patrick, I want to say something. I think most affordable housing stuff that's built, I know where I'm living, is all electric. I think that's also just because it has to be, whether it's efficient, whatever. But is there exceptions for this? I thought I read that they want to exempt affordable housing or government-run buildings.
Currently,
no?
It includes affordable housing.
I mean, it should, but okay. All right, I wasn't sure about that.
It includes affordable housing and municipal buildings. And I think, I believe that one day we'll have the technology required to make all of these buildings even more efficient than they are today. And to be close to net zero. I don't believe, based on anything that I've read or seen, that 100% net zero is achievable from a building usage point. I think you might get to an emissions, like you might be able to, you know, do a little bit of horse trading between where you're getting your electricity from. But I think ultimately, you know, there's going to be a 1%, 2%, 10% range of still carbon emission coming from building. So the real question I have in my mind is, why are we doing this way? Why are we putting people into a position where they're not going to pay a dime of that tax? They're going to hire attorneys. They're going to create defense funds. We all know how that goes. And they're going to then sue the city. And we will be embroiled in a bunch of nonsense that doesn't get us one step closer to an emissions-free future, and simply pits the people whom Quentin has duped into believing that the only thing holding us back from net zero is my individual greed.
Yeah.
And it is nonsense. So
let me ask you a question then, because I think I understand most everything you're saying here, but now they are in the midst of a process. You know, they are trying to pass some amendments to something here. So my simple question is there an alternative way of thinking about all of this so that you're doing good, but doing it better and in a way that's defensible and more holistic than
of course there's a 15 gigawatt elephant in the room named Eversource who needs to be front and center at this conversation. Their infrastructure, in their own words, is held together by electrical tape and good intentions. We need to upgrade our grid at the state level. We need to divest in fossil fuel usage, build up our solar and our wind to get that 52% down to frickin' zero before we even attempt this.
Yeah.
And then there's the practical application of how we do it for buildings that are existing. Brand new buildings, it's not simple, but at least I can control the construction. For a building that already exists, what do I do with a 50 unit residential building that's got all gas heat? Where do those people go? You know, how do we upgrade for the buildings that are already mostly electrified but don't have, that aren't fully electrified? Where do I put those transformers and switchgear? Now, Eversource has made great use of our underground areas, sidewalks. They have vaults. They have substations. There's lots that they can do and lots we can work with them to do to upgrade that infrastructure and provide a better network to supply our buildings. Moreover, I'm often told by counselors, oh, they did this in this city, they did that in this city, and oh my God, it's amazing.
Oh, I hate when they keep bringing up other
Cambridge
cities.
Cambridge is so backwards. And I'm like, great, bring that consultant here. Show me how we can do it right now. And I think there's so many property owners who'll be happy to jump in on this, but not with a tax hanging over our head and not with decommissioning our buildings over our head. And as long as Quentin Zondervan is in that room, I'll be bringing my attorney.
So I think you bring up an important point. I think both of you do bring up an important point about how importable are some of the techniques and efforts that people have tried elsewhere into a Cambridge environment where we have a lot of old buildings and we don't necessarily want to just tear them all down and replace them. So how much of what we see elsewhere really can be?
But also, you know, a lot of these places, they own the utility, like Los Angeles, or like, you know, a lot of places own the electrical utility that's already one step ahead. I mean, that relates to other things too, but I'm just saying there's so many nuances there that people just,
so like my question to the Zondervanites out there, why can't I get to 80%? Why can't I get to 50%? Why can't we look at buildings individually and say, okay, well, this building has got, you know, 70 individual gas-fired forced hot air heating systems. Maybe we work around this.
You know, one of the little pieces of rhetoric we often hear from some of the current city councilors and others as well is, so, well, Cambridge needs to be the leader in thing.
It's the same argument.
And it's an argument that kind of falls flat for me, because, you know, Cambridge, we can try and be a leader, but you know, we also have a you know, the style of development of housing here historically is not the same as it is in a lot of other places. You know, the type, the intense use of, again, not to be focusing on the lab uses in Harvard and MIT and such, but, you know, Cambridge is sort of exceptional and different than a lot of other places.
Robert, you know? Cambridge can be the leader, but in an overly polarized environment and time, we can be a reasonable leader, a just leader, a leader that looks at the actual problem and finds a practical solution for it and shows the way to other cities and how they can accomplish it, because they all have the same problems we have. So there's a way to be a leader without being an ideologue.
So let me ask a question, and we got about a minute and a half here.
Minute and a half, right.
So my question really is this, is of all the various property owners who might be affected by this, mm-hmm. how many of them are actually aware of what's, of even the existing disclosure ordinance,
right. Right.
let alone some of the proposed amendments? Is this a small fraction or a large fraction?
Last week it was zero. This week, it's a considerable amount because of my efforts, the efforts of other people who are working this, who I won't name to protect their identities.
Yeah.
But we're all pushing to at least make people aware. But yeah. if you look on the Budo map for the city and recording, I think that gives you a good idea of what's really happening, because I think maybe 25 to 50% of the, depending on which district you're in, people still aren't reporting from 2014. I got my first letter last week, or not last one, but last month. So if we have a bad data set and we don't have an incomplete data set, or they don't even know that they're supposed to record, they're going to get slammed with a tax if this passes.
Yeah.
Comes up to a vote to go to the council tomorrow.
So we're going to have to wind this one down here now. But what people can do, I presume, is certainly pay attention.
Yeah.
If there are committee meetings and things that you can be a part of
tomorrow,
or letters to write everything else, this is what people must do.
All right.
Email me, call me. I'm accessible 24 hours a day.
We'll see you next segment. Okay.
Right. Bye.